So when does jazz first arrive in Europe? Well, the saxophone was invented by the Belgian Adolphe Sax, and as we've discussed, maybe half of the musical roots of jazz are European. But jazz was clearly brewed in America, and it's Americans who brought it back to Europe and taught Europeans how to play it. The First World War brought lots of jazz to Europe, where European composers like Darius Milhaud, who taught Dave Brubeck, Stravinsky and Nadia Boulanger, who taught Copland, Bernstein, and Quincy Jones, among many others, were the first Europeans to hear jazz and understand that it should be respected. Add to that that African Americans were especially welcomed in Europe. There were no race restrictions, and there were lots of venues, and of course European cities are closer together with a fast, clean train system. It was cheap to live. Much of the cash was duty-free. So lots and lots of African Americans moved to Europe or went to Europe to play jazz. After World War II, this became a mad rush with Ben Webster, Don Byas, Kenny Clark, Kenny Drew, Dexter Gordon, Stan Getz, George Russell, Art Farmer, all actually moving and settling to live in Europe for a time. With all of this jazz, Europeans, of course, also began to play jazz. You're listening to Stefan Grappelli and Django Reinhardt, the French gypsy guitarist who was the first really great European jazz player. Although he's probably an isolated case. But homegrown jazz players began to flourish in the 1960s with Swedish baritone sax player Lars Gulen and English players like Joe Harriott, John Dankworth, and Stan Tracy. These are all great players, and we could have started with any one of them. But most of them are playing in an existing style. In other words, they're playing jazz, but they're playing jazz's derivative of the parent American style. So while they're great players, they're not forging a new sound, which, as we've discussed, is really part of what we jazz players really aspire to. But then, in the 1970s, we get a totally new sound from a label called ECM, based in Munich. ECM stands for Editions of Contemporary Music, and it's a label that was managed and run, and still is, by Manfred Eicher. Again, it's in Munich, but there are lots of Scandinavian musicians on it. It's often called the New Nordic Sound, or the New Nordic Cool. But does this sound Nordic or Scandinavian? Okay, so the saxophone player is from Oslo. He's Norwegian. That's Jan Garbarek. But what about the rest? The album is called Ragas and Sagas, and the other musicians are from Pakistan. You're hearing the tabla and the sarangi in the background, and Ustad Fateh Ali Khan on vocals, who, by the way, is the son of the famous Qawwali singer Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. So, of course, the first question is it jazz? For some people, it might not be. But what are its jazz qualities? Well, basically, it's a saxophone over a rhythm section. Rhythm sections, different kinds of drums and drones. It's improvised. It's even modal music. And of course, it is a fusion of jazz with other musics, but isn't almost all of the jazz we've been talking about all semester long fused with other musics? Well, even if you hate this or you don't think it's jazz, Manfred Eicher created a new sound. The first thing to understand is that he really does create a new house sound. All of the ECM albums have this kind of hushed, intimate, ethereal ambience. It's something that's both a quality of the recording and of the playing style. Almost all of ECM is slow-moving, pastoral moods, subdued rhythms, and minimalist. It's a bit like chamber music. It has group dynamic, but it's also kind of minimalist and subdued, which is why it's often called new cool, because it bears some resemblance to the old cool. It's not a music that embraces virtuosity or displays of technique. You're not going to find bebop solos or salsa rhythms here. In fact, this house feel extends to the look of the album covers. All of the album covers have this same kind of look, ethereal pictures of nature, fonts with no serifs, very, very plain covers. So while there's kind of a strict house sound, once Eicher hired his players, he gave them complete freedom. If you really want to hear the least commercial music of Chick Corea, Keith Jarrett, Gary Burton, Pat Metheny, Charles Lloyd, Jack DeJohnette, or Peter Erskine, listen to the work that they did on ECM. Remember that during the 1970s, this exact period, jazz was becoming more commercial again, but only by fusing with rock or soul. So that the big American companies who were recording jazz, and there weren't very many, they only wanted to record fusion. They wanted to record jazz that might sell. This is before Wynton Marsalis comes along and gets a Columbia contract in the 80s and things start to change again. But ECM was the only label that didn't force you to sell out or become commercial, that would really allow you to play whatever kind of jazz you wanted to. So because of this, Manfred Eicher was able to gather the best Americans of the 70s generation in Europe to record for him. Remember, for example, Jimmy Giuffre and the Third Stream Cool that we mentioned a few weeks ago? All of his recordings were made for ECM. Now meet Keith Jarrett. Does this sound a bit more like jazz? Keith Jarrett is a musician almost as vast as the topic of this podcast. He plays jazz, but also ethnic music, folk music, country, gospel. They all float through his music. His concerts are seance-like in their attempt to receive the blazing forth of a divine will, as he describes it. And his cries and grunts and stopping are legendary, and they either add or detract to that atmosphere, according to your preference. He started doing these solo concerts in the 1970s, and what you're listening to is an excerpt from the huge-selling Köln concert of 1975. It was released, of course, on ECM. It helped both to set improvisation again as the focus for his work, and also it established ECM as a major record company. We'll be reading some Keith Jarrett and discussing it in class. But what do you think Keith Jarrett thinks about improvisation and its role in jazz? Just from listening to this and thinking about what this is. This is free jazz. Okay, so it sounds a little different. It's not quite as free as Cecil Taylor. Or is it? Keith Jarrett is walking out on a stage to do an entire concert of solo piano music. He's probably less interested in not playing all of the conventions like Cecil Taylor is. Keith Jarrett is willing to play the blues and to play things that sound like songs. But he is trying to simply improvise, to really be in the moment and just to play. So the idea of free jazz can either mean trying to free yourself from the conventions of Western music, or it can also mean the idea of being totally spontaneous and playing freely and playing improvised music. In addition to these solo concerts, Keith Jarrett also put together a pair of quartets. The first of these was his American Quartet, where interestingly he used two of Ornette Coleman's former sidemen, Charlie Hayden and Dewey Redman. But he also put together a new Scandinavian quartet, with Jan Garbarek, who you've already heard on sax, Paul Danielsen on bass, and John Christensen on drums. All of their recordings, of course, were on ECM. Here they are live in Tokyo in 1974. One of the first things to notice is that the group has its own sound, and Jan Garbarek on saxophone has an immediately unique, recognizable sound, exactly what we want all jazz musicians to have. Listen to a bit of Keith's piano solo and notice some of the characteristic grunting. So ask yourself again, what is jazz like about this music? What are all the characteristics that it shares with everything that we've talked about to this point? And what's new? The first thing that it clearly shares is instrumentation and structure. Right, this is a basic quartet that we've had since bebop. And the format's the same too. There's a head, their solos. But you're right, it doesn't swing. There are a different set of basic rhythms here, and while Keith Jarrett's a very bluesy piano player, the whole thing does to kind of speak a different language. That was true of fusion, too. Fusion was using rock grooves. Not sure you would call this a rock groove, but it is a different kind of beat, and that's typical for all of this music. New rhythms are being infused into a jazz format of improvisation. What about the sounds and the texture? Well, the rhythm here may seem to be more driving than it was in the first Cool. Rhythm tends to be subtle in these recordings, and the sounds may be a little lighter. Again, the recordings themselves are certainly very spacious. So for that combination of reasons, this is often dubbed Euro New Cool. And maybe you can hear that it is a little cool in its outlook. Also notice the unique timbre of the instruments. Here's Jan Garbarek on tenor sax. So that's Keith Jarrett with his Scandinavian quartet, including Jan Garbarek on soprano sax, recorded on ECM in the mid-1970s. Another American who was equally important to the ECM label was Gary Burton. Here he is playing a duet with Chick Corea, and this should be more obviously cool. It's an unusual instrumentation, just the piano and the vibes, and of course our favorite cool instrument, the vibes. Now, part of what makes Gary great is that he invents a new technique. This is a pretty typical thing for jazz players. Remember the saxophone, there was no technique, so Coleman Hawkins invents one. So most vibraphone players in the classical tradition were playing with one mallet in each hand. Well, Gary invented a technique. If you look at the picture, you can see he has two mallets in one hand. Sometimes he even plays with three mallets. This enables him to play the vibes more like a piano, to play chords. That's Gary Burton using his famous four mallet technique. Of course, Gary can also play pretty well with two mallets and can take a solo like anybody else and just turn his hand. That's actually one of ECM's very first releases in 1972. So Gary Burton goes on to play with George Shearing and Stan Getz, two other cool names you may know, then forms a group with Larry Correll and Steve Swallow, and finally his own Gary Burton group, now with Pat Metheny playing guitar. only thing European about this music is that it's on a European label, ECM. They're all Americans. But think, why might this still be called European New Cool? Kind of subdued rhythm, it's not swinging very hard, pastel colors. It does bear some resemblance to the old cool. Now, the guitarist on this record is another Berklee College graduate, Pat Metheny, who soon makes his own debut with Bright Size Life on ECM also in 1976. He also collaborated with Ornette Coleman, who called Metheny one of the most melodic musicians ever. Here is another side of Pat Metheny, this time recording with Ornette Coleman, Song X. Pat Metheny likes to alternate the things that he does, and you'll often get swings like this in his music. But perhaps he's best known for his Pat Metheny group with UNT graduate Lyle Mays on keyboard. This is their tribute to American garage bands. What do you think this sounds like? Does this sound like a garage band you ever heard? I mean, clearly this music is rock influenced, but the sound world is much closer to Scandinavia than to most American bands in the 60s. So in some ways, this is a continuation of fusion jazz. But compared to the fusion we talked about last week, is it rock fusion? Is it jazz soul fusion? Or is it more of a pop sound? Or is it something else? Is the fusion that's taking place between this ECM Nordic sound that's already forming? Well, in 1981, Metheny and Lyle Mays recorded As Falls Wichita, So Falls Wichita Falls, also on ECM, just as the New Age music movement was getting started and the label Windham Hill was taking off. While Metheny rejected the New Age label, you can hear that there are some textual similarities, and lots of other people are going to want to imitate this music. So if you've had acupuncture, or you've been to one of those California sushi and sauna places, or some kind of New Age gym, maybe you've heard a knockoff of this type of New Age music. Sometimes they're whale sounds. But this is the original, so what kind of thing is going on here? First of all, you hear references to other world sounds, Japanese Kyoto, maybe some sitar. Notice there's no propulsive drums, there's no groove at all, it's just kind of atmosphere. This is a very long track, by the way, it lasts 21 minutes. Poor Pat Metheny, he's getting knocked off a lot. So if the earlier music gets knocked off as smooth jazz, this gets knocked off as kind of a New Age whale music, lethargic world music sort of thing. And in the 80s it became very popular. But here, this is three guys improvising in this new cool style on ECM. Like the musicians in the first cool movement, musicians on ECM liked to experiment with odd meters. In other words, rhythms that were not multiples of two, as they almost always are in the West. Remember, we talked about the idea that in Western music, rhythm is hierarchical. So there are groups of twos and groups of threes, but we always add them up. So it's either 2 + 2 = 4 or 3 + 3 in symmetrical pairs. But in other musics, you get 2 + 2 + 3 + 2 + 3 + 3 + 2, other kinds of series of music. So this is a piece by Pat Metheny that's in 11. And he actually won his first Grammy for this. This is First Circle from the album of the same name, First Circle, on ECM in 1984. Again, as with the last two examples, all is not as it first appears. Remember, in the GarageBand piece, it sounded kind of like a GarageBand, but again, through this kind of Northern European lens. Well, here, it's kind of pop sounding. There's, again, it's very, very smooth. There's vocals, but there are long jazz solos in this piece. Again, it's a long take, 10 minutes, and it has this odd meter, so you certainly can't dance to it. So on the one hand, it looks like Pat Metheny's all over the map. A GarageBand tribute, recordings with Ornette Coleman, this kind of new age stuff without any kind of rhythm, this pop sound with odd meters, and we're going to discover Brazilian influence in a minute. But what do all these musics have in common? That's Lyle Mays playing the piano. But now that it's become less propulsive, does it sound a little bit like As Falls Wichita? I'm going to take you to the end now so you can hear a little bit of a Lyle Mays Pat Metheny trademark. This long, long counter line with these punch chords underneath. So lots of questions to ask, but here are two. First is, do you recognize the connection to jazz? What would it be? But second, do you like this music? This is really music of the 80s in a lot of ways. There's a real 80s sensibility to it. What does that mean for you? When I first started teaching this course, I got to Pat Metheny. Everybody knew Pat Metheny. He was the closest thing jazz had to a rock star. But now I'm not sure you've heard of him, so I have no idea what you think. So I'm hoping that by now you can clearly identify two new key features in Pat Metheny's music. One is that he seems to have an interest in pop sounds. He's not embarrassed or shying away from fusing and borrowing from other forms of American popular music. Whereas with Miles Davis, we talked about something that was a bit more avant-garde, a bit more rugged, Pat Metheny is perfectly at home borrowing the kinds of open vocals and a kind of pop sheen to his music. The other are the world influences, musicians from other parts of the world. This is especially true for Brazil. He develops a love affair with Brazilian music, even moves there for a year. A few years after the first circle that we listened to, this is a Brazilian album called Letter from Home that also wins a Grammy, also on ECM from 1989. So think of this paradox. We've been talking now about three Americans, Keith Jarrett, Gary Burton, and Pat Metheny, all of whom recorded for a European label, ECM, based in Germany and run by German Manfred Eicher, but a producer who made lots of use of players, especially from Norway, in the 70s and 80s. But think about why American musicians might have begun to move to Europe in the 50s and 60s. What would have drawn them to leave their home and go live and work someplace else? Well, perhaps the most obvious reason is that in Europe there were simply fewer racial tensions for African Americans. In Europe, an African American is just another type of foreigner. In America, we often talk about race as being black and white. There's certainly more variety of color in Europe, and it was simply easier for black musicians, especially, to navigate in Europe. But there are other reasons. A second reason is that there are more state subsidies. There is simply more money. Americans spend very little state subsidy on the arts. So in America, it's very expensive to go to the symphony, and the symphony gets very little money from the government. In fact, the entire country, the United States of America, the budget for the NEA is just over $100 million. That's much less than the city of Berlin spends on its symphonies and its art programs. So one city in Europe spends more than the entire federal government. There's simply more money in Europe for the arts. And the third thing is that there's a greater interest in Europe in art music, both more experimental music, that's everything from free jazz clubs in Poland and Italy, to also lots of small concert halls. Because of the way art is funded in this country, concert halls tend to be huge. If you've only been to American concert halls, you'll be very, very surprised at how small the halls are in Europe. If you go to La Scala or Wigmore Hall in London, you won't believe that there are only a few hundred seats. At Wagner's Bayreuth, there are only 750 seats, not even 1,000 seats. That's the size of our Carruth Auditorium. So in a smaller hall with government subsidy, you can do more experimental things. But also there is an interest in simply having more experimental music. It's simply something the audiences are interested in. So now, in the 80s, we've been talking about these three Americans, and we've been talking about Americans that have generally gone to Europe. Instead of simply nurturing American talent, by the 70s, European homegrown talent begins to take advantage of this freedom, and there are more European jazz players. It also helps that at the same time, Wynton is putting American jazz back on the map, and there are some record companies now willing to hire jazz in America, so some people move back home. But there remains greater freedom of experimentation in Europe. So when Robin Eubanks made his debut recording in 1988 on a German label, he said, quote, "I knew Japan was really into standards, so I included Walken and You Don't Know What Love Is. And the U.S. is more pop-oriented, so I did a Stevie Wonder tune. But then in Europe, it's just wide open for anything," end quote. In fact, in Europe, you're more likely to get a big subsidy from the government if you're playing original new music. The idea is that, well, if you're playing Glenn Miller or you're playing music that everybody's heard, you don't need a subsidy. You're playing commercial or pop music. So Europeans are more likely to classify jazz as art music, and then it becomes eligible for subsidies. I've had this experience myself. There's lots of money available in Europe, and it actually encourages you to experiment. So the United States may still be where success is made as a jazz musician, but Europe is still the place to take chances and grow as a musician. So while ECM began by recording Americans, often with Norwegian sidemen, soon there were European stars of their own. So in the 1970s, when jazz was changing and searching for a new sound, it seemed natural that Jan Garbarek, a middle-class white kid from Oslo, who said he didn't really feel a connection with the blues, quote, "It's really not my tradition," he said. So instead, he fused the structure, harmony, and rhythms of jazz with his own Norwegian melodic sense. Like the other musicians that Manfred Eicher encouraged to find their own voice, Garbarek was soon playing with an all-Norwegian group in what came to be known as the Nordic Sound, a version of this new Nordic cool or new European cool. Notice the sound of the saxophone. Just like John Coltrane or Charlie Parker, this is a saxophone sound you should be able to recognize. It's an intense, maybe pinched sound, but it's utterly recognizable as the sound of Jan Garbarek. If you've noticed the drone in the piano and the bass, yes, this is a kind of modal jazz. this sound is dubbed the Nordic Sound, or the New Cool. And of course it was recorded on ECM. But let's hear a few other things recorded by European musicians on ECM. It's not always this cool. Just like the other genres we've talked about, there's a breadth of musicians who fit into one genre. Remember hard bop? How would you create a taxonomy for the music within the label ECM? Well, here's a Norwegian guitarist, Terje Rypdal. This is from the album Skywards on ECM in 1997. So first notice that the sound of the guitar is pretty metal. But what he's doing with it is quintessentially ECM. There's not a lot of propulsive rhythm. It's a long solo. It's recorded in this kind of open, expansive sound. Perhaps the mellowest metal guitar you'll ever hear. Here's another Norwegian, Niels Petter Molvær, who merges his own tradition and his sense of jazz with drum and bass, techno, house, and jungle. So those two guys I play just as examples, but this is a name you really have to know. Tomasz Stanko, the great Polish trumpet player. Probably one of the great trumpet players alive today. In fact, outside of the United States, he's probably as well known as Wynton Marsalis. Any place but the U.S., if you asked anybody who is the two great trumpet players alive today, Tomasz Stanko would be one of the two. This is from his album From the Green Hill on ECM, of course. This piece is called Domino, and it features a host of players from other places. Dino Saluzzi, the bandoneon player, John Sermon, the English barry saxophone player, Michelle Makarski on violin, and then the usual Norwegians on bass and drums. Probably a pretty good exam question for what does the Nordic sound or new cool sound like. Notice the unusual array of instruments. Barry sax, bandoneon, which is like an accordion, violin. The rhythm is loose and free-flowing. Like the original cool, this feels like chamber music. Then there's the distinctive trumpet sound of Tomasz Stanko. It's a little hard to pick out the trumpet because it's kind of far back in the mix, but that's a great example of the kind of ECM chamber jazz. Here's another example of the unique sound of Stanko's trumpet. And here is Stanko playing with his new quartet. trumpet sound should be easily recognizable. It's kind of a growl sound from Cootie Williams. It's not at all the sort of classical sound that you get from Wynton Marsalis. But also notice that even when this group is swinging pretty hard like this, it still has kind of a cool, easy, relaxed flow to the music. If you had to compare this band to one other band, the closest would probably be the great Miles Davis Quintet of the 60s, where there's a kind of a stop-start, free-flowing rhythm and a unique trumpet player with a unique sound. So this is the ECM sound, also called the Nordic sound or the New Cool. So for some people, this pruning of the macho virtuosity of bebop was a good thing. It let the music flow, become chamber music, cool again. But for others, it was just boring. And I have to say, I would not recommend listening to all of Jan Garbarek's albums on a sunny beach. In some ways, this is the music of long winter Norwegian nights. So the Nordic sound, though, is only one of the major influences on the flowering of world jazz that we'll talk about in the next podcast. Specifically, world jazz is going to be all about creating a unique sound, putting an emphasis on improvisation, and most importantly, the thing that we learned here, to fuse jazz with your own native culture, to give it a kind of authenticity and integrity. Think about that. Are any of those things really new to jazz? Maybe not. But all of that is also associated with Manfred Eicher and his label ECM, Editions of Contemporary Music, and both the American and European artists we've talked about today, and the world artists we'll talk about next time.